So we are reading about Savitri waking up in the morning after that wonderful symbol dawn. And Sri Aurobindo describes the waking up in several stages. First, there's a total forgetfulness, deep sleep, where the being is not remembering the sorrow here. But then there's a slow, faint remembrance, and her body recognizes the close and lingering ache, deep, quiet, old, made natural to its place, but knew not why it was there, nor whence it came. And this is because the power of consciousness that kindles the mind, that wakes up the mind, was still withdrawn. Then Sri Aurobindo images the body like a house. The servants are sleepy and unwilling to wake up. The servant's senses, heavy, unwilling, were life's servitors. The torch of sense refused to burn. So the brain, the unassisted brain, found not its past. It doesn't remember. But then when she moves a little bit, when she stirs, then that's a summons to her far-winging spirit that hasn't been tied to the body all through the night. It has been voyaging. But with that little movement, her strong, far-winging spirit traveled back to the body, back to the yoke, the sign of servitude, the yoke of ignorance and fate, back to the labor and stress of mortal days. And as the spirit returns, it lights up a pathway through strange symbol dreams as the seas of sleep ebb away. So then her whole nature being feels the rule, the control of that spirit. And all lights, life's rooms light up swiftly, and the windows open on the hours, on the passage of time. And the tired feet of thought approached her doors. I think that's where we stop. You'll read, Poonam.
Her house of nature felt an unseen sway. Illumined swiftly were life's darkened rooms, and memory's casements open on the hours. And the tired feet of thought approached her doors. All came back to her, earth and love and doom. The ancient disputants encircled her like giant figures wrestling in the night. The godheads from the dim inconscient born awoke to struggle and the pang divine, and in the shadow of her flaming heart, at the somber center of the tired debate, a guardian of the unconcerned abyss, inheriting the long agony of the globe, a stone still figure of high and godlike pain, stared into space with fixed, regardless eyes that saw grief's timeless depths, but not life's goal. Afflicted by his harsh divinity, bound to his throne, he waited unappeased. The daily oblation
Thank you. So when she wakes up, when she becomes mentally conscious, she remembers everything. Everything, all came back to her. And it's as if everything that she's facing is represented by these figures. Earth, love, doom, and then pain. It's as if Earth, this Earth which she loves and which she's come to save, this is one of these figures. The other is love, her love for the soul of the Earth, for Satyavan. And then there's doom or fate, as if certain things are fixed and predestined and can't be avoided, because the cosmic laws are like that. Sri Aurobindo says these are ancient disputants. They're quarreling now around Savitri's heart, but perhaps they've always been quarreling ever since the beginning of the earth. But they are circling round her like giant figures wrestling in the night, each trying to be stronger than the others. These seem to be godheads, divine powers that have been born from the dim inconscient, from the very basis of the manifestation. And as Savitri wakes up, they wake up to struggle. And this divine pang, I think this is the pang of consciousness and love. And it's as if she's aware at the very center of this struggle, her heart is flaming there, but it's casting a shadow. In the shadow is this fourth figure, this stone-still figure of high and godlike pain. This figure seems to be the guardian, the protector, or the representative of the deep abyss of suffering that is there on earth. He's inherited the responsibility for all the long agony of the globe, all the suffering there has ever been on earth. He's like a carved figure, a stone figure. He's still a stone, and he's just staring into space. His eyes are fixed. They don't move. They don't seem to see properly, regardless. They're not really looking. But what he is seeing is the timeless depths of grief. What he's not seeing is the goal of life, where all this is going, where all this suffering is leading to, where this quarrel is going to culminate. He is suffering. He's afflicted by his harsh divinity, this severe, painful divinity. And he's tied to his throne. He can't move. He can't escape. What he's waiting for, unappeased, unsatisfied, is the daily offering of Savitri's unwept tears. She's not expressing her grief with weeping and wailing. It's all held within. And this is what is, in a way, feeding this Godhead. An oblation is a sacrifice to a god. And usually when we, in ordinary religion, we want to appeal to a divinity, we want to appease him, please him, satisfy him, so that he will protect and help us. This Godhead cannot be appeased. He can't be satisfied.
Still, he's waiting for her daily redemption.
Yes, every day she has to give it. She's been giving it every day for a whole year now. He's still not satisfied.
All the fierce question of man's hours relief, the sacrifice of suffering and desire, earth offers to the immortal ecstasy begun again beneath the eternal hand. Awake, she endured the moment's serried march and looked on this green, smiling, dangerous world and heard the ignorant cry of living things amid the trivial sounds, the unchanging scene, her soul arose confronting time and fate. Immobile in herself, she gathered force. This was the day when Satyavan must die.
This is what Savitri wakes up to on this morning. For her, all the fierce question of man's hours relived as she wakes. It comes alive again, this fierce question. And she feels again the beginning of this sacrifice of suffering and desire which earth nature offers every day to the immortal ecstasy. It's as if she feels this eternal hand saying yes to all this. She's awake and she has to endure the passage of the moment's serried march, serried, packed closely together, as if the moments are
like soldiers marching,
yes. Very packed, very close together, serried. And she opens her eyes and sees this green, smiling world, which is also so full of danger. And she hears all those birds and animals waking up in the forest, the ignorant cry of living things. All those living things are happy. No, we heard them acclaiming their portion of transient joy, short-lived joy. What is the word?
Ephemeral.
Ephemeral. Ephemeral. Thank you. Yes. The joy that's there just for a moment. So these are the trivial sounds that we hear when we wake up in the morning, or that she hears. And this unchanging scene of the forest. So in all this, surrounded by all this, Savitri's soul rises up, ready to face time and fate. She gathers all her forces, all her strength, because she knows that this was the day when Satyavan must die. She's been expecting this day for a whole year now. She's had time to prepare herself for this day. Now she gathers all her strength to face it.
Yesterday I read a book in English, The Supreme, and Mother said, Shorvindo is the soul of the matter.
The soul of matter.
Yeah. And after I give a text from Martin for the next news, he tell me also, Shorvindo is the soul of the... It was barely touch when I discover, I understand something at this moment.
This line, God-like pain.
Yes.
It means God-like, what aspect of God?
If we say God-like, may suggest different things. One thing is something very large and powerful with a wide range of power. We can remember this word, this line. There's another line that will come that might cast some light on it a little later.
Here the pain is the capital.
With a capital P, yes. This is the pain, the cosmic pain. Oh, that's what he is representing, the pain of the universe. I remember Nirodha here in this room, seeing, he said, I'm so happy to be here, it makes me remember my time with my Lord, he said, seeing a big picture of Sri Aurobindo there, not this one, another one, similar one. And he pointed out this line, he said, you think about it, God-like pain, what does it mean? And I think that he was thinking, remembering all the pain, that the physical pain, the inner pain that Sri Aurobindo suffered, that he saw him suffering. Sri Aurobindo says, I carry the sorrow of millions in my breast. So that's what the soul of the world has to do.
From the dim inconscient bond.
That seems to be these earth and love and doom.
Love is born from the inconscient.
Well, it manifests itself in our world from the inconscient. Of course, it has a divine origin. The whole thing, all of them, earth also, and even fate. Yes. But here they emerge out of the dim inconscient. And then there's this sacrifice of suffering and desire, all that we feel in the course of every day. It's part of a sacrifice that our earth nature is offering to the immortal ecstasy. And when we make an offering to the divine like that, here in this case to the immortal Ananda, it's a preparation to receive and experience that state.
No? Coming back to the pain, I feel that humanity or we have some kind of affinity towards pain. Maybe we enjoy the pain or we somehow, I don't know how to put it, some kind of...
No, there body. Is. If there were no delight in the pain, it wouldn't happen. So one of the themes of this book, which we can trace, it is maybe this sacrifice of suffering and desire that earth offers to the immortal ecstasy, to the supreme Ananda. Let's not say much more about it now. There's a lot about this in Book 6. So let's move on with the story. Savitri has woken up, and as she wakes up, she remembers not only this, that it's the day when Satyavan must die, but everything in her life that has led up to this moment. Amal, you read.
Canto 2, Bhishu. Awhile, withdrawn in secret fields of thought, her mind moved in a many-imaged past that lived again and saw its end approach. Dying, it lived imperishably in her, transient and vanishing from transient eyes, invisible, a fateful ghost of self. It bore the future on its phantom breast. Along the fleeting event's far backward trail, regressed the stream of the insistent hours, and on the bank of the mysterious flood, people with well-loved forms now seen no more, and the subtle images of things that were, her witness spirit stood reviewing time.
Thank you.
And you have to read it, no? You have to read the whole canto, no?
Ah, we have to read the whole canto. That's right. How nice. We can read the whole canto once. Then you read a bit further, Amma.
All that she once had hoped and dreamed and been flew past her, eagle wing through memory's skies, as in a many-hued flaming inner dawn, her life's broad highways and sweet bypaths lay mapped to her sun-clear recording view from the bright country of her childhood's days and the blue mountains of her soaring youth and the paradise groves and peacock wings of love to joy clutched under the silent shadow of doom in a last turn where heaven raced with hell.
Thank you, Lupa.
12 passionate months led in a day of fate. An absolute supernatural darkness falls on man sometimes. And he draws near to it.
Would you read a little bit more now?
Okay. An hour arrives when fail all nature's means, forced out from their protecting ignorance, and flying back on his naked primal need, he at length must cast from his him his selfish soul and be the unguarded entity within. That hour had fallen now in Savitri, a point she had reached where life might be in vain, or in her unborn element awake. Her will must cancel her body's destiny, for only the unborn spirit's timeless power can reach a yoke imposed by loss and time. Only the self that builds this figure of self can raise the fixed interminable line that joins these changing names, these numberless lives, these new oblivious personalities, and keeps still lurking in our conscious acts the trail of old forgotten thoughts and deeds. Disown the legacy of our buried selves, the burdensome heirship to our vanished forms, accepted blindly by the body and the soul.
Thank you. Mihong.
And in an unremembered tale, its a beginning lost, its a motif and plot concealed, a once living story has prepared and made our present fate, child of past energies, the fixity of the cosmic sequences, fastened with the hidden inevitable links. She must disrupt this lord by her soul's force. Her past, a block on the immortal's road. Make a raised ground and shape anew her fate. A colloquy of the original gods, meeting upon the borders of the unknown. Her soul's debate with the embodied nothingness must be wrestled out on a dangerous dim background. Her being must confront its formless course against the universe weigh its single self. On the bare peak where self is alone with a note, and life has no sense, and love no place to stand, she must plead her case upon extinction's verge in the world's death cave, uphold life's helpless clay, and vindicate her right to be and love. Altered must be nature's harsh economy.
Acquittance.
Acquittance she must win from her past is bound. An old account of suffering be just. Strike out from time the soul's long compounded debt and the heavy servitude of the karmic gods, the slow revenge of unforgiving law, and the deep need of universal pain, and hard sacrifice and tragic consequence. Out of a timeless barrier, she must break, penetrate with her thinking depth, the voice monstrous hush, look into the lonely eyes of immortal death, and with her nude speed measure the infinity's night.
Mm, thank you.
The great.
89, yeah?
The great and dolorous moment.
The great and dolorous moment now was close. A male battalion marching to its doom. The last long days went by with heavy tramp, long but too soon to pass, too near the end. Alone amid the many faces loved, aware among unknowing happy hearts, her armored spirit kept watch upon the hours, listening for a foreseen tremendous step in the closed beauty of the inhuman wilds. A combatant in silent, dreadful mists, the world unknowing. For the world she stood, no helper had she saved the strength within. There was no witness of terrestrial eyes. The gods above and nature's soul below were the spectators of that mighty strife.
Thank you. Don.
Around her were the austere sky-pointing hills and the green murmurous broad deep. The murmurous broad, deep-thoughted woods muttered incessantly their muffled spell. A dense, magnificent, colored, self-wrapped life draped in the beams of vivid emerald monotone and set with checkered sunbeams and blithe flowers immured her day's destiny's secluded scene. There had she grown to the stature of her spirit, the genius of titanic silence. Keeping her soul in its wide loneliness, had shown to her herself's bare reality and mated her with her environment. Its solitude greatened her human hours with a background of the eternal and unique. A force of spare direct necessity reduced the heavy framework of men's days and his overburdening mass of outward needs to a first thin strip of simple animal wants and the mighty wildness of the primitive earth and the brooding multitude of patient trees and the musing sapphire leisure and the musing sapphire leisure of the sky and the solid weight of the slowly passing months had left in her deep room for thought and God.
Thank you. Mary Hansch.
There was the Gamma's region full of wind, a spot for the eternal thread on earth set in the cloistral yearning of the woods and washed by the aspiration of the speak of the peaks appeared through an rare opening in time where stillness listening felt the unspoken word and the hours forgot to pass towards grief and change. Here, with the suddenness divine advanced air, repeating the marvel of the first descent, chanting to rapture the dull earthly ground, love came to her, hiding the shadow death. Well might he find in her his perfect shrine, since first the earth beings heavenward hold began, through all the long ordeal of the race, never a weaver creature bore his shaft, that burning test of the Godhead in our thoughts, a lightning form with heights on our abyss. All
Thank you, Manoha.
Near to earth's whiteness, intimate with heaven, exalted and swift, her long, large vision spirit, voyaging through worlds of splendor and of calm, overflew the ways of thought to unborn things. Ardent was her self-poised and stumbling will, her mind a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, and not one turbid wave. As in a mystic and dynamic dance, a priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing gold, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods, the heart of silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative beats, a body like a parable of dawn that seemed a niche for vain divinity, or golden temple door to things beyond. Immortal rhythms swayed in her time-bound steps. Her look, her smile awoke celestial sense. Even in earth stuff and their intense delight, hold a supernal beauty on man's lives.
Thank you.
White self-giving was her native art. Her magnanimity was of sea or sky, enveloped with its greatness all that came, and gave a sense as of a gradient world. Her kindly care was a sweet tempered sun. Her high passion blew heaven's equipoise, as might a soul fly like a hunted bird, escaping the tired winds from a world of storms, and a quiet reach like a remembered rest, in a heaven of safety and splendid soft repose, one could drink life back in streams of honey, recover the lost habit of happiness, feel the bright nature's glorious ambience, and preen joy in her warmth and colors, a deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred and ultimate. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart.
Thank you.
The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell, vacant of the dwarf's self's imprisoned air. Her mood could harbor his sublime breath, spiritual that can make all things new. For even her vows were secrecies of light. At once she was the stillness and word, a continent of self-diffusing peace, an ocean of untrending virgin fire. The strength, the silence of the gods were hers. In her, he found a vastness like his own. His high, warm, subtle ether he refined, and moved in her as in his natural home. In her, he met his own eternity.
Thank you. I think we'll read to the end of the canto and then go back. Margaret? Sorry? Continuous reading is getting rather dull. I'm reveling in these marvelous words. Sorry?
I agree with you. Listen to his dullness.
Just try to try to follow what he's saying. It's dull because you're not understanding. Is it like that? You've done it in an earlier class. So try to enjoy the marvelous poetry and its mantric effect. I'm feeling it very strongly. So surely I think you can too. Margaret, yes.
Till then, no mournful line had bared.
Bard.
The slave. On the gray breast of this precarious earth, since her oft sign in its breast fastened house, opening in sympathy with happier stars, her life is not exposed to sorrowful change. Remember beauty exclaimed lips ignored and wondered at this world of fragile forms carried on canvas strips of shimmering time. The impunity of unborn minds was hers. Although she deemed to bear the human load, her walk kept still the measures of the gods. Earth's breast had failed to stain that brilliant glass, clear with the dust of our mortal atmosphere, its reflected heaven's spiritual joy. Almost they saw, lift within her light, her playmate in the sempiternal spheres, descended from its unattainable realms in her attracting advent's luminous wake, the white fire dragon bird of endless bliss, drifting with burning wings above her days. Heaven's tranquil shield guarded the missing child. The glowing orbit was her early term, years like old raiment of the gods that pass, their youth set throned in calm felicity.
Thank you.
But joy cannot endure until the end. There is a darkness in terrestrial things that will not suffer long too glad a note. On her too close and inescapable hand, the armed immortal bore the snare of time. One dealt with her who meets the burden great, assigner of the ordeal and the path, who chooses in the holocaust of the soul, death, fall, and sorrow as the spirit's goads. The dubious goddess with his torch of pain lit up the chasm of the unfinished world and called her to fill with her vast self the abyss. August and pitiless in his calm outlook, highlighting the eternal's dreadful strategy, he measured the difficulty with the mind and dug more deep the gulf that all must cross. Assailing her divinest elements, he made her heart kin to the striving human heart and forced her strength to its appointed role.
Thank you. Patty? Line 229, for this she had accepted.
Page 17, you are on 7.
For this she had accepted mortal breath, to wrestle with the shadow she had gone, and must confront the riddle of man's birth, and life's brief struggle in dumb matter's night, whether to bear with ignorance and death, or hew the waves of immortality, to win or lose the godlike game for man, was her soul's issue, thrown with destiny's dice. But not to submit and suffer was she bore. To lead, to deliver was her glorious part. Here was no fabric of terrestrial make, fit for a day's use by busy, careless powers. An image fluttering on the screen of fate, half animated for a passing show, or a castaway on the ocean of desire, flung to the eddies in a ruthless sport, and tossed along the gulfs of circumstance, a creature born to bend beneath the yoke, a chapel and a plaything of time's lords, or one more pawn who comes destined to be pushed one slow move forward on a measureless board in the chess play of the earth soul with doom. Such is the human figure drawn by time. A conscious frame was here, a self-born force.
Thank you. Josephine.
In this enigma of the dusk of God, this slow and strange, uneasy compromise of limiting nature with a limitless soul, where all must move between an ordered chance and an uncaring blind necessity. Too high the fire of spiritual dare not live. If once it met the intense original flame, an answering touch might shatter all measures made, and earth sink down with the weight of the ends.
A jail.
Is this immense material world. Across each road stands armed a stone-eyed law. At every gate, the huge, dim sentinels pace a gray tribunal of the ignorant, an inquisition of the priests of night, in judgment sit on the adventurer's soul. And the dual table and the karmic mirror restrain the titans and the god. Pain with its lash, joy with its silver bribe, guard the pale circling immobility. A bond is put on the high climbing line, a seal on the too large, wide open heart. Death stays the journey
discovered
life.
Thank you. Mila.
That is the front of the inconscient safe, while the tidy coils of the ions pass, and the ultimate process in the sacred fence, and the ball hook can close the skies no more. But one stood up and lit the timeless flame. A rhyme by the dark power that hates all bliss, in the dire court where life must pay for joy, sentenced by the mechanic justicer, to the afflicting penalty of man's hopes, her head she bowed, not to the stark decree, buried her helpless heart to destiny's stroke. So goes unmasked the mind-born, willing man, obedient to the statues fixed of old, admitting without appeal the nether gods. In her, the superhuman cast its seed, enough to fold its mighty wings of being, her spirit refused to have the common soil, or finding all life's golden meaning rock, compound with earth, extract from the sterilist, or quench with black despair the God-given light. Accustomed to the eternal and the truth, her being conscious of its divine bounds, ask not for mortal pain's relief. Patch not with failure, burden, or compromise. A work she had to do, a word to speak, writing the unfinished story of her soul in thoughts and actions grave in nature's book. She accepted not to close the luminous page, cancel her commerce with eternity, or set a signature of weak assent to the brute balance of the world's exchange.
Thank you. Patricia.
A force in her that tore
a little louder, Patricia.
A force in her that toiled since earth was made, accomplishing in life the great world plan, pursuing after death immortal aims, repugned to admit frustration's barren road, forfeit the meaning of the birth and time, obey the government of the casual fact, or yield her high destiny up to passing chance. In her own self, she found her high recourse. She matched with the iron law her sovereign right. Her single will opposed the cosmic. To stay the wheels of doom, this greatness rose. At the unseen's knock upon her hidden gates, her strength made greater by the lightning's touch.
awoke from slumber in your heart's recess. It bore the stroke of that which kills that. Across the awful march, no eye can see. Barring its dreadful root, no will can change. She faced the injuries of the universe. A heart stood in the way of the driving wheels. Its giant workings paused in front of a mind. Its stark conventions met the flame of a soul. A magic leverage suddenly is caught that moves the veiled ineffable's timeless will. A prayer, a master act, a keen idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. Then miracle is made the common rule. One mighty deed can change the course of things. A lonely thought becomes omnipotent.
Thank you. Tuan.
All now seems nature masked machinery, an endless servitude to material rule, and long determinations rich in chain, her firm and senseless habits aping long, her empire of unconscious death device, anew the claim of man's free human will. He too is a machine amid machines. A piston brain turns out the shapes of thought. A beating heart cuts out emotions' modes. An insentient energy fabricates a soul. On the figure of the world reveals the signs of a tight chance repeating her old steps in circles around metal's winding posts, a random series of inept events to which reason lends elusive sense is here. Empiric life's instinctive search are a vast ignorant mind's colossal work. But wisdom comes and vision grows within. Then nature's instrument crowns himself a king. He feels his witnessing self and conscious power. His soul steps back and sees the light supreme. A Godhead stands behind the brute machine. This truth broke in a triumph of fire. A victory was won for God and man. The deity revealed its hidden face. The great world model now in earth arose. A living choice reversed fate's cold dead return, affirmed the spirit's tread on circumstance, pressed back the senseless dire revolving wheel, and stopped the mute march of necessity. The flaming warrior from the eternal peaks empowered to force the door denied and closed. Smoke from death's visage, its dumb absolute, and burst the bounds of consciousness and time.
Thank you. I feel that these two cantos, canto one and canto two, they form together a kind of overture to Sri Aurobindo's drama. And all the themes that we'll encounter later in the book, they're just hinted at in single lines or two lines here and there. No? But then on this last page and a half, this overture rises to a great climax. No? A flaming warrior from the eternal peaks, empowered to force the door denied and closed. Smote from death's visage its dumb absolute and burst the bounds of consciousness and time. It's really very, well, it's all very powerful. So we go back to the beginning of the canto and have a look at these first lines. Savitri waking up and remembering. Rosa, you would read? a while. Thank you. So as she wakes up, Savitri's mind is withdrawn deep within in secret fields of thought, the inner mind, and it's moving in a many-imaged past. She's looking back into her personal past. That past is gone, but it lives again and consciously sees the end of that story, of that past approach. It's dying, the past is dying, but in her it lives imperishably. She will carry this imprint with her, won't die, the past. The past time, is transient, and our transient physical eyes don't see it anymore. But still, although it's invisible, the past is a fateful ghost of self, a phantom of the self which has lived through those experiences. And the past is like a stream bearing the future on its phantom breast. We can say it's a phantom because it is past, it's gone, we don't see it, but that past has brought this present moment, and it's in a way determining the future. So she sees it like a river, a continuous flow of past and present and future. And she sees, as she looks back into the past, so she sees this stream of hours. And it's as if she's standing on the bank of that river, that stream of time, that mysterious flood. In the river she sees all the well-loved forms that she doesn't see with the physical eyes. She sees the subtle images of things that passed, but her witness spirit is standing, reviewing that flow of time. I think something like this happens to us when we're approaching very significant moments in our lives, that we review what everything that has led up to this time.
The memory?
Yes. Yes. Slava. Yes.
Regress the stream of the insistent hours.
to regress, it means to flow backwards, or you can trace it. You start from now and you go backwards, yes. Yes, well, you can't stop the hours, you can't stop the flow of the hours, no.
In a sense, they
just keep flowing, you can't stop that river, no. Yeah, I think what he's showing here is the way that when some very significant moment comes or is approaching, then we look back and see everything that's led up to this moment. What has brought it to this? And he's describing this in very, very beautiful images.
I think the insistence should be that it cannot be forgotten. Therefore, it's insistent. Going back, getting up, whatever is happening now, the insistent.
Can be insistent in both senses, yes. The hours keep flowing, you can't stop them.
No.
But the memory of them also is insistent. Yeah.
Later on, we use the image of the wheel that ever moves.
That goes, yes, that's right.
It's the same thing, no?
Slava, you will read.
View. Yes.
So this is what her reviewing spirit, her witness spirit sees, reviewing. And it's as if everything flies past her. Now it's not a river, it's birds, eagle-winged memories flying through memory skies. And then it's as if she's standing on a very high mountain in a dawn that's lighting up her whole life. She's seeing it all below her, her life's broad highways, all the main lines, and the sweet little bypaths, the little lanes and paths, lay mapped to her sun-clear recording view. It's as if she's the sun, or her consciousness is the sun, lighting up all this landscape of her life, from the bright country of her childhood days and the blue mountains of her soaring youth and the paradise groves and peacock wings of love once she has met Satyavano. And then this ordeal to joy clutched under the silent shadow of doom in a last turn, where there's a race between the bliss of being with Satyavan and this terrible ordeal of the foreknowledge of death. So those last 12 months have been particularly intense, no? These 12 passionate months of her time with Satyavan. They led in a day of fate, this day, the day that she's facing now. I think we'll stop there for today. We can listen to Mother's reading of these, some of these lines. I think we can listen to the last two.
Last two.
Hmm? And then we go on with just the first one. Yeah, three passages.
Summon of her body's voiceless call, her strong, far-winged spirit traveled back to the yoke of ignorance and faith, back to the labor and stress of mortal days, lighting a pathway through strange symbol dreams across the ebbing of the seas of sleep. Mobile in herself, she gathered forth. This was the day when Satyavan must die. An absolute supernatural darkness falls on man sometimes when he draws near to God. An hour comes when fail all nature's needs, forced out from the protecting ignorance and flung back on his naked primal need. He at length must cast from him his surface soul and be the ungarbed entity within. That hour had fallen now on Savitri.
Thanks, Tushar.